Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 56 of Nerd Pride Radio. 56? Name that Pokemon! It's Mankey! Or in Yu-Gi-Oh, it's the Gold Rat. 56. 56 is also the exact number of curls in Shirley Temple's hair at all times when she was a child star. Weird. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I'm a Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's probably like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. Oh, our sponsor this week, Hypnotoad. All right, before we get into the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, it's time for a little feedback. Whoa, definitely feedback. All right, and this one is from Kyle. Hey, all right. Kyle commented on last week's episode where I did the lightning round and I used a little timer, limited everything to 3 minutes. And Kyle says, please don't use the timer again. I'd rather have 6 or 7 minutes on 40% of these topics than only the most initial thoughts on all of them. Wow. Wow, really? Dude, you wound me. Wound me. I was just trying something new. I even told you right in the episode. I said, hey, I'll be back with the regular segments and the Podomatic next week. Everything will be back to normal. But you gotta stab me like this? Oh, so sad. But then Ronster has a follow-up, and Ronster says, oh, yeah, he agrees. Yeah, he'd rather have me ramble on and dwell in the rabbit holes and oh, shoot. Well, all right, if Ronster says it, then I guess we're done. No more timer. You guys win. It's out. All right. Guess what? That's right. It's time for yet another installment of our all-too-frequent segment, Mike Was Wrong! Oh, all right, this is just a small thing. In the last episode, I told you about the computer that I got from my parents that I ultimately didn't use, and I had to replace it. And I complained that that computer only had 250 megabytes of storage on it, which was obviously stupid. You can't even put an operating system on that anymore. No, it was 250 gigabytes of storage, or 200, something like that, which is still way inadequate for what I was doing. I mean, half of it's used up with Windows, and then the other half, I mean, I only had like 100 gig worth of space or 80 gig worth of space to hold the rest of my stuff. Just wouldn't work. So anyway, I know nobody even noticed, nobody cared, but it bugged me when I listened to the episode. So there you go. I've made my corrections. And that means this is the time for me, the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. This is where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list. Then the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, let's check out the master list. First, a little meta talk.
Oppenheimer!
That's right, meta talk is where I kind of pull back the curtain a little bit, talk about the podcast, talk about the website. You know, every once in a while, as I'm recording, as I'm listening to my podcasts, especially when I'm not recording and I've been putting things off, I started to have a bit of an existential crisis about the Nerd Pride Radio podcast and about the website in general. And I start to wonder, you know, what's the point of it? Why do I even bother sometimes? Aren't I just going over the same ground? Aren't I just, I don't know, what am I really contributing to society? There's so much going on out there that is so important. Is what I do really that big a deal? And you know, and I'll gain viewers over the course of a season. Things go really well. I get, you know, 20, 30 episodes in a row, build up to a couple hundred listeners. And then I take my break over the summer and I start back up with you guys and I'm back down to 20, 25 of you and I have to build up again. And it just feels like, yeah, is there a point to it? And so I started to re-examine and, well, here's what I discovered while I was listening to last week's episode. Let me just run you a series of clips from last week's episode and about a minute long. You guys see if you notice the theme here. All right, here we go. You're going to love this. I love John Oliver. I love his new show, which is Last Week Tonight. Love it, love it. Everybody loves this movie. Everybody in the world loves this movie. You know I love Pathfinder. I really love. I love Gen Con. We loved the costumes. I love you. I love the work you put in. We love Toy Story. Everybody loved Toy Story. I love Gollum. I love Walking Dead. I love Walking Dead. I love Kumail Nanjiani. I absolutely love it. Love Lindsay Sterling. You know how I love Weird Al. I love Snake. I love that game. I love the thing. I love Snake, and I love the smart TV. I love this thing. I loved Mork and Mindy. I loved his stand-up. Loved him. Love Pathfinder. Love Roll20. Love playing this game. I loved first edition AD&D. I loved first edition D&D because it was role-playing. I loved D&D. I love Advanced Dungeons and Dragons for all of that. I loved the treasure tables. I loved doing that. I love rolling up random stuff on tables. Yeah, see, that's just from one episode. Do you realize how many times an episode I talk about how much I love stuff? And if I include the times that I say that I like stuff, that's twice as many as that even. And I realize that's what this podcast is about. This is why I do it. It's because I'm just talking about stuff that I love. This show, it's a celebration of loving stuff. It's a celebration of nerdy stuff, geeky stuff, quirky niche stuff that just niche? Is it niche or niche? I have no idea. But it is a celebration of all those things that I really enjoy, and I just wanna share with people. I like that it's twofold. All right. One, I love nerd culture. I love talking about it, sharing it. I want to make sure that when I enjoy something, I want to make sure you guys enjoy it too. I want to communicate with you and be everyone on the same page. I'm not making any real sense here. I know that, but it's just a feeling, you know? I'm spreading joy, and that's the second part of it, is I am a firm believer that you reap what you sow. I mean, you know, if you walk around being happy and nice to people, then people are more likely to be happy and nice to you. I mean, it's just a fact. And more than that, if you're nice to people, if you can spread happiness, if you can make other people even just a little bit brighter for a moment, then they're more likely to be happy and bright and cheerful and positive to somebody else. I don't want to be all corny with pay it forward. I know this is cheesy, but it's really, really what I'm doing. And like I say, it's just things that I love. And especially, like I say, that quirky niche stuff that it just fascinates me. I love the joy in the minutiae of stuff. You know, like, when I can listen to podcasts or watch videos just about some esoteric detail of mathematics, and I'm just hypnotized for like 10 straight minutes learning something new. When I look at, we were just watching a TED talk, and a gal is on there doing a lecture about fireflies. And it occurs to me, what happens in that person's life that they decide that, okay, yeah, sure, they're an ichthyologist is fish. What's the bug people? I'm not even going to look it up. An insectologist? Why is this escaping me? I have a mental block. I hate it when this happens. There are certain things I get mental blocks on a regular basis. One, Ptolemy, Alexander the Great's general who took over Egypt and founded the Ptolemaic line of Egyptian pharaohs or kings. Ptolemy's name, just can't ever get it. Julianne Moore, for some reason, every time I see Julianne Moore, I immediately go, oh, that's, and I can't. I just can't get it. Eddie Vedder. Eddie Vedder, which is no longer a problem for me because of the Weird Al song, My Baby's in Love with Eddie Vedder, and I can finally remember that name all the time. But for the life of me, I had a period of like a year and a half where every time I listened to a Pearl Jam song, I'm like, what? Oh, God, what is his name? Why can't I come up with it? Just a block. There's some shared memory space that just won't come out. And now, apparently, the name of an insect scientist, it's not a... Oh, what? This is going to kill me, and I'm going to refuse to look it up. I'm going to sit here and just wait it out, and I know one of you will post it on the forums after you hear this, and I'm not going to look. I'm not going to read it, because I'm going to wait until my mind gets it on its own. This is important to me. But anyway, I'm listening to this woman, and she's talking about fireflies, and I'm like, okay, yeah, you know what? She's a scientist. She studies bugs. She loves insects. But somewhere along the line, she decided that fireflies were the most fascinating thing in the world. She's clearly devoted years of her life and career to fireflies in specific. Now, you know, fireflies you can almost get. They glow, they're pretty, they're pretty amazing as far as the animal world goes. But, you know, if you tell me you're a whale scientist, a whale biologist, I get that. You know, whales, these huge, fascinating creatures. But there are people whose entire life is nothing but mosquitoes. All right? Nothing but mosquitoes and how mosquitoes spread disease. And that's their life's passion. Because to them, that's just as fascinating as you know, watching your documentary on orangutans or raccoons or whatever other cute mammal with a face that you love. For them, it's mosquitoes or earthworms or a particular strain of bacteria and they find what's fascinating and interesting about that, and they can delve as deep as you want to get. And that's what makes them happy. And I guess that's kind of what I'm... I don't know. Once again, am I making any sense? I just have this feeling. I'm so motivated on the podcast right now. I'm so happy to be back. Last week's episode, even though, okay, obviously you guys hated it. I get it. Whatever. Even though it may not have been my best cast ever, I had so much fun doing it. And I'm so excited to come back and start talking again because it's finding those things which are fascinating, those things that are interesting, and just working with them is wonderful. Which, by the way, you probably already noticed in that series of clips, that was my love set of clips. I could have easily done a love and like and made that thing three times as long. But other words to listen for, if you want, because now I'm going to be self-conscious through the rest of this podcast. Every time I use the word love, I'm really self-conscious about it because I'm sitting there for 2 hours listening to my own podcast, trying to pick out the word love and then copy paste and blah. All right. But other words to listen for, fascinating. I've already used fascinating probably about 16 times in this last paragraph. Favorite. I use the word favorite a lot. I had no idea. And I only figured that out because that was my cue. If I said something, oh, this is my favorite. I have lots of favorites. That was my cue to start listening to. Oh, good, good. I'm going to say I love it next. Okay. Clip that out. Awesome and amazing. These are the words that I use all the time. I'm sure there's others, but again, now that I've kind of picked him out because I was listening for him, I'm hoping I don't get too self-conscious about it. We'll see. But anyway, my whole point is, especially over the summer, especially while I was away from the podcast, I had kind of this existential crisis of faith, wondering, you know, what's the point of it all? Does this actually do anything? Am I doing some good? Should I be altering this podcast to be talking about issues that are more relevant? I mean, certainly, you know, nerd culture issues, but I should be spending more time, you know, being a nerd activist? What should I be doing? Because there's so much stuff out there. And then I realized, no, this is valuable in and of itself. And if there's only 10 of you out there listening, if there's only 2 of you, if it's just Ronster and my brother, and that's the only people who tune in every week, I'm thrilled to death. I will talk to you guys every week. I love having you here. You are wonderful. So thank you for joining me. Thank you for coming along on this ride. I'm sorry to get all mushy. All right, hug, we're done. Let's move on to something much more fun. It's time to visit my gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. Role-playing games, video games, card games, if it fits on my gaming table, I'm here to share it with you. What am I going to talk about? Go ahead, take a guess. Take a guess. You guys have been here before. Pathfinder, you know I am. All right. First off, I would like to just brace you guys. The theme for tonight's entire episode, and I say tonight, I'm recording in the afternoon, and you guys are probably listening to it on your morning commute, so really, tonight is weird. But the theme of the episode today is unprepared. I have prepared nothing. I have like four words written down for everything. So if, like the last segment, I get really rambly, hey, that's what you paid for. All right. So I actually have two things to talk about. First is Pathfinder in specific. We gamed again last night, session 24, for our Roll20 game, Rise of the Rune Lords Adventure Path. Game mastered, dungeon mastered. No, game mastered. We're playing Pathfinder. Game mastered by DM Darks. Bless you. All right. We had such a good time. We've just started book two, and it's a murder mystery. Ooh, it's a supernatural horror murder mystery. This is going to be good. A grisly, cult-like ritual murders. We've got suspects to interview. We've got, and at one point, I mean, we're grilling suspects. And as I'm doing it, I realize I'm playing Munch and Finn from SVU. That's what I'm doing. It's just like, oh, well, yeah, you say that, but, your boss gonna see it the same way? Yeah, maybe you should open up. You seem to be hiding something, mister. We were just playing it out, especially me and Jeff Hawes, did the interview with the two guys. I mean, I don't want to downplay anybody else's role because we all pitched in and I came in late. So I felt kind of bad that I kind of muscled my way in at the beginning, when I showed up and just kind of took over. But I have the charisma, damn it. Or at least, well, we got another guy with the charisma, but I have the charisma and the diplomacy. So just deal with that. And so I did one of the interviews. Jeff did another. Everyone was out tracing clues, following footprints, putting stuff together. Oh, now we found out that there's a guy in an asylum somewhere, the survivor from the first one who went crazy, and we get to go interview him. This is going to be spectacular. And so, yeah, I even brought it up. I'm like, oh, thank God. 16 seasons of SVU has finally paid off. Damn right it has. It was a really good episode. There was not a fight to be had. This is one of the first ones we've done where there's been no fighting at all. And I think everyone had a good time. I know I did. Maybe it's because I was hogging the spotlight. Do I do that? I don't know. Either way, I had a great time. I hope everyone else did because it was a lot of fun. Just good role play. Great time. And lots of good jokes and it was just a good time. So anyway, love Pathfinder. Love Roll20. This game is awesome. I, of course, will keep you updated every week because I can't stop talking about it. Well, probably not next week because we only play every other week. But anyway, you get the idea. So, the other role-playing thing that I have going is last week I talked about the new Pathfinder book coming out, the Advanced Class Guide, and I specifically talked about Shardra, the iconic character in the book, who is a transgendered dwarven shaman. Born as a male and now has transformed and lives life as a female. And I found that really fascinating, as I mentioned last week. See, there's that word fascinating. Ugh, self-conscious. And I couldn't stop thinking about that character and what it would be like to role-play that character. And I don't know that I could do it effectively. I don't know that I could... I mean, it's an interesting challenge. I might want to try that out someday, because I like challenging myself. I think that would be really interesting. But, I mean, look, I have no problem playing as a female character. I'm doing it right now in the current Pathfinder game I'm in, and I love this character. I'm playing a 16-year-old teenage girl who is a bad imitation of Taylor Swift, and I'm really enjoying it. And I feel like, I'm not saying I know what it's like to be a woman. I'm not saying I know... You know, I'm not even saying necessarily that I'm a convincing woman, but I can imagine it, and that's the whole point of role playing is I can imagine what that is like, and I role play that as respectfully as I can to the best of my ability, and I'm really enjoying the character and I'm enjoying the game. And then I thought further, well, okay, what about a gay character? I'm like, I would have no problem playing a gay character. I mean, you know, that's no big deal. I'm not a gay person. However, I can certainly imagine what that is like. I mean, it's just an attraction to another person, you know, just swap the genders. I can picture what that's like. I could role play that. Again, hopefully I could role play that respectfully And I don't, you know, again, not saying I know what it's like to be gay, but I can imagine that. You know, I could play a different race. We play, you know, not just, you know, different races as we talk about it in the real world, you know, black, white, Asian. I don't have to go through and list all of them to be inclusive here, but you get my point. But also, you know, playing as other species entirely, playing as dwarves and elves traditionally we've done. I've also done goblins and bugbears and, you know, role-playing as a dragon, role-playing as, I can see all of that. All right. So if I can picture all of this, I'm like, why would it be so tough for me to role-play a transgendered character? What is it about a trans character that would be tough for me? And like I said, I put a lot of thought in this because that kind of bugs me that I'm imagining a trans character and I don't think I could do it justice. I don't think I could respectfully play a trans character and make it convincing and be true to who that character really is. I don't think it would come off well in my hands. And I finally realized what it is that it is the role-playing of... I'm sorry. I got three other thoughts in my head, and I realized that if I mix these up, it's going to sound really, really horrible if I say it that way. What I'm saying is, to be a transgendered person is to be someone who is, at least in the beginning, someone who is not happy with who they are. Someone who feels that they are in the wrong body. They feel that their body is not really theirs. It doesn't match who they are inside. At least that's my understanding of you know, my over general. Oh, God, I can't believe I have to stop right in the middle of this. Hold on. Crime and Netleys. I'm so sorry. I was on a roll too, and now I've completely lost my train of thought. So again, the idea of not being comfortable inside your own skin and not being comfortable with who you are, is just something that is such an alien concept to me. I don't think I could roleplay it to be that unhappy, with your physical form. And again, this is an oversimplification of things, I'm sure, but it just doesn't, I don't feel like I could do it justice. And I just, that's weird. And I mean, I can imagine it. I mean, I can imagine what that's like. Well, as I said earlier, it's about imagination, but I don't think I could feel it. I don't think I could feel it and really, I don't know, really connect with it because it's just so different from who I mean. I'm a generally pretty happy guy, and I like myself a lot. And I'm, unhappy with my physical form. Yeah, I'm really, really fat, and I'm trying to lose weight. Told you guys that last time, because I dropped from. All right, let's do the diet update right now. Last week I told you I started at 273, got down to 270, so I had lost 3 pounds. Now I've lost another 3, so 267. I'm getting there. But even being a big fat guy. You know, and yeah, I'd like to lose some weight, but I still like me. I feel right. I feel natural. This is who I am, even as a fat dude, even as, you know. So it doesn't, it doesn't quite click with me. And there was one other thing I was going to say about that. I was going to connect it. Not saying that, being transgendered is equivalent to a mental illness, but I am saying that in a similar way, I would have a tough time role-playing certain types of mental illness as well. Because someone who is severely clinically depressed, and I've had depressed friends and acquaintances and family members, and I've talked to people and I've read stuff, and I know something about depression. I know something about a lot of mental illnesses. I've got a psychology major from college, for Christ's sake. But I don't know that I can relate to being inside that person's head to really be able to imagine myself feeling that way, to project that level of emotion on myself. It would be really tough. I just found this really fascinating. I don't know if you guys have ever tried role playing. I mean, have you ever role played? Let's start off with, have you done the cross gender stuff? Just, you know, if you're a dude playing a female, or vice versa, if you're a female player playing a male. Have you tried playing gay characters? Have you tried, Darks told me about a previous campaign of his where he played a gay paladin. And as I'm picturing it, you know, he's telling me he played a gay paladin. He kind of had, a crush on someone else's character in the group, never really went anywhere. And it wasn't a big, you know, it wasn't a huge deal that he was gay. It was just, it was an unusual for D&D or unusual for Pathfinder, unusual in that role to see a gay character. And so it was interesting. And as he's describing it to me, and all he gave me was just his few brief lines about it, but my first thought was, oh God, if I could play a gay paladin, I know, and I said this to Darks, I know exactly the Boy Scout that I would model this on. I know a dude who, he's no longer a scout, he dropped out a while ago, but gay guy, really cool, and I just, that kind of, he, you know, that nobility and that, you know, he wants to do what's right and wants, you know, he's just a good person. But possibly because of his sexual orientation, not accepted all the time by the people he's serving and the people he's trying to help. And I like that conflict as a character. I could see doing that. I knew this guy well enough that, oh yeah, I could certainly get into that headspace. I could enjoy playing that. Just fascinating to me. And so fascinating. Again, how many times do I use that word? I'm sorry. Anyway, did I have a point? Was I going somewhere with this? Yeah, I think it almost makes me wonder then down the road. If you guys have tried this, I would love to hear your stories. Post them up on the board. Send them to me in a message. Give me some. I would love to hear your stories about it. Playing someone, if you've played someone with a mental illness, something that is, now, if you're a person who has a mental illness of your own and you've played something very similar in a game, I completely get that. That makes sense. That's something that you can easily relate to and lets you work through certain facets of your own self while you're there. Because every character I do, whether I'm playing someone who's a lot like myself or someone who's very different from myself, all of my characters still have a lot of me invested in them. And a lot of times, especially when you get really deep into it, you got to separate out your own reactions from what's going on. Although, all right, I'm just taking this off on yet another tangent. excuse me. When you talk about separating yourself from a character, here's one thing that I've found with Dothan, my most recent character, is there are times in the game, because we play on Roll20 where we're doing, you know, the live online tabletop with the shared chat and the whole business, and then there's other times where we just post out on the message boards, and so it's a much slower transaction. But in both of those situations, there will be times where something will happen, and I, as a player, as a person, me, Mike, I get insulted or offended or particularly tickled by something, but I have a strong emotional reaction myself to what's going on. And there's a bit of judgment, and you have to weigh it kind of quick sometimes, but there's a bit of judgment of, okay, that's how I reacted. Is that how this character reacts? Because sometimes we want to do the Mary Sue thing. We want to be the perfect hero in our games, and we want our character to do all the really cool stuff that we can't do in real life, that they always have that witty comeback right at their hip. They always have the perfect reaction. They always handle things in a noble fashion. And sometimes when I have that gut reaction, even if it's stupid and childish, even if it's a gut reaction that I wouldn't have acted on in real life, for example, we're in an argument. It was me and Talvin. Our characters were arguing about goblin rights, actually. And it was a great back and forth. I really enjoyed doing it. And the stuff he was saying was just getting me, as a person, so frustrated. And I was taking it kind of personally. And I realized that, okay, in real life, I realized that, look, it's a couple of characters in the game arguing about goblins. And so even if I have this gut reaction, this is not something I would act on. If I was debating human rights about some real life situation on the boards, I would not play on that reaction. I would not, you know, do something childish and stupid. You know, you can control yourself, even if you have that feeling at the back of your head going, oh, how dare they? Oh, please, they're not even listening to me at this point. But I realized, oh, my character can do that. And while it would have been cooler, I'm putting that in air quotes that you can't see, it would have been cooler to have her be more level-headed and have her you know, come up with some rational comeback and some brilliant explanation and use that bard charisma to charm everybody into seeing the wisdom of her arguments, I realized that, no, you know what? I'm going to let her have that reaction. Even though it's one I wouldn't have acted on, she certainly can because she's a 16-year-old girl. And she's got, well, I'm hoping her wisdom is lower than mine. It's horrible. But, yeah, I'm not that big on common sense myself. And so I had her storm off in a huff, which then, of course, led people to referring to her as childish. And I think brat was the word that was used. And that's perfectly appropriate because that's the way she was acting. I think justifiably so. But it was just kind of cool to use those reactions that, you know, again, sometimes I used to worry so much about separating myself from the character and going, okay, how would they react? Well, how would they react? And sometimes, you know what? My own gut reaction as a human being is, you know what? You make it theirs. Just say, okay, no, that's what they do. Just don't think about it. Don't dwell on it too hard. Just take that gut reaction and go, you know what? Now it's my character's reaction and she's going to go with it. Wow. I feel like all of these things, I feel like I should be making a point, but I'm not. Anyway, to sum up, I don't think I could. So there we go. Before I tangle this up any further, let's move on. Science fiction double feature. Science fiction double feature, that's right. Here at Nerd Pride Radio, you get not one, but two movie reviews for the same low, low price. Except I read the spiel off the page because that's what I always say. But it's not really two reviews. It's just one. It's Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh, you know what? In fact, I should have just watched it twice so that I could do it as a double feature right here. I can't express how good this movie is. This movie is awesome. Spectacular. If you haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy yet, I don't even know why you're still sitting here. All right? Do you remember how much you loved Avengers? Do you remember that? This is better than Avengers. It's really better than Avengers. Do you remember how much I raved about Dawn of the Planet of the Apes last week? This is better than Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, amazingly, I said, was one of my favorite movies of all time. I said that last week, and already I have something that tops it. Holy crow, this thing was amazing. It was just phenomenal. Guardians of the Galaxy, and I've never read the comics. I know vaguely of the characters, okay? I know somewhat who they are, but not much. All right, that was just never my forte in comics. I never did Guardians of the Galaxy. And so this is all new to me, all right? And when they talk about the Nova Corps and they talk about Thanos, all right, Thanos I know. Thanos I know from other stuff. All these different bit characters. The Collector, I've barely seen the Collector in stuff. There are all these things I'm only tangentially aware of. So it's all new to me, and it was spectacular. It was, hold on a second. All right, I'm back. And I loved this movie. I know, I saw a whole clip. You can play it over and over again. I love Guardians of the Galaxy. I love Rocket. I love Groot. I love all of them. They were Drax. Oh, Drax was phenomenal. And I hear that Drax is different in the movie from the comics. And the people who were talking, I was listening to Comedy Film Nerds. If you don't listen to this podcast, you probably should. They're just fun. Comedy Film Nerds, every once in a while, for a movie that they just have a lot of discussion about. Usually movies that they really, really love, but sometimes it's movies that these are movies that need to be fixed or need something. They'll do a whole spoiler episode where they spend the entire hour and a half doing nothing but talking about the whole movie, beginning to end, breaking it down, giving away everything from the very beginning to the resolution, and they just break the whole movie down. It's the spoiler apps. And they had Jackie Cation on as their guest. Jackie Cation she's an amazing comedian who is also huge nerd. She has her own podcast, The Dork Forest, where she invites guests on. Every week she has on a new guest to just talk about whatever their nerd passion is. also a fascinating podcast. But anyway, Jackie Cation is on because she loves Guardians of the Galaxy. She is a devotee from early. She knows everything about Guardians of the Galaxy, and she loved this movie. And so she said, yeah, Drax is in Guardians of the Galaxy, the movie, Drax is very different than what he was in the comics, as far as personality and certain other things about him. And she said, and it was a great change. It was a positive change. So there's a lot of things that were changed for the movie. And she said, some of them, she kind of liked the comic version better, but she sees why they did it. Others, she thinks that the movie version is way improved over the original. I mean, here's a person who loved the comics, sees all the changes, all the differences, and she accepts all of them because this is just a good movie. I can't tell you. The CGI, again, just like I told you with Planet of the Apes, the CGI work is amazing. There's never a question for you that you have a talking raccoon and his living tree partner, and they just work, and they're awesome. The movie is funny and exciting, and everything about it, amazing. I can't recommend it enough. I'm serious. If it's still in the theaters where you live and you haven't seen it, you are doing yourself a disservice if you don't go watch it now. All right. Now, full disclosure, my wife enjoyed the movie and said it was all right. I mean, it was good. I enjoyed it. It was good. She was not nearly as tickled as I was, or as all of my children were. To me, I'm watching this film, and there was no moment in that film that did not completely thrill me. I was so excited, beginning to end. It was great. And now, Mike, really, if you talk it up this big, you're only setting us up for disappointment. No film can possibly live up to this sort of hype. Yeah, I know, and maybe I'm ruining it for you. I don't care. I can't stop raving about this film. It's really good. It's a near perfect film. It really is. And, it is setting up clearly for a bigger world. Well, it is a bigger world. It's the galaxy. It's huge. And it's set up all the elements for, things like Nova and the Nova Corps. It's set up all the elements. I mean, they've already, even before the movie was released, they were so certain they had a winner with this thing that they already announced Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and they were right to do so. No mistake. This is opening up a greater Marvel universe. That the way they've built with the Avengers, they built up to the Avengers here, all right? And now they're building up to something even bigger, with the links between all of these things, and the movies are just going to keep going. I hope the Marvel universe continues to be this good. I hope they continue to take chances, James Gunn was the director on this one. All right. James Gunn, who directed Super. Did you see Super? Oh, I've talked about Super before. Super, one of the best superhero movies, ever. Kick-Ass is a great movie. All right. I loved Kick-Ass, but Super did it better. Super did it way better. Super was just, it was disturbing, and it was weird, and that was James Gunn. This is what James Gunn does. James Gunn did Slither with Nathan Fillion. Did you ever see Slither? Oh, Slither is, Slither, you gotta know, cheesy horror movie. It is absolutely a cheesy horror movie. No two ways about it, but it's smart, and it follows a bunch of cliches, but it does it right, and it's just entertaining as all hell. My wife and I watched Slither years ago on Netflix, and I think we may have only watched it because Nathan Fillion was in it, and we loved it. We loved it. Nathan Fillion has talked about that movie, and, whether you think it's stupid, cheesy horror or not, Nathan Fillion said, we had so much fun making that movie. I would make a sequel. I would make a new Slither movie every year if they kept inviting me back. That's how much fun they had doing it. And it shows, just in the whole end production, it shows that, damn it, they love this movie. And again, I don't by any means think that Slither is some masterpiece of cinema. It's not. It's a cheesy horror movie just done really well. And it was a lot of fun. And so James Gunn is just a dude that I really like. And to give James Gunn, those are his big films, by the way. I mean, this is the guy who does Slither and Super. These are little films that you've barely heard of. And yet, they give him Guardians of the Galaxy. He ran away with it. His co-writer on this thing is a gal who has no other credits for movie writing. Done. This is what she, this is it. And they did it right. I'm just so happy. I just, man, Marvel has got to eventually let me down. I mean, Pixar did, right? So one day Marvel, I mean, okay, Iron Man 3 wasn't the greatest. I don't care what you guys say about it. Iron Man 3 had some real flaws. But in general, Marvel is doing right by me on these things, and I hope they keep it up. This is a universe that I can get on board with. It was so much fun. So anyway, have I raved enough about that? Probably not. I love this movie. Go watch it. And now let's move on to... Oh, no.
Nerd rage came flashing back, and I just looked at him and went, Rrr!
Oh, no. Get the little ones out of the room. Make sure you're sitting down for this. That's right. It's time for some nerd rage. Okay. You know what? At this point, I've put it off so long, I don't even feel that passionate about it now. This is my history rage, and I'm gonna give you the quick, down-and-dirty version of the history rage. And maybe by the time I get to the end of it, I'll be a little worked up. We'll find out. But you guys deserve to know, because I keep putting you off. I have a problem with the way we teach history to kids, specifically how westernized our history lessons are, how Eurocentric history is. I mean, it's really even world history in high school. World history really focuses on Western civilization. I mean, really strongly. And yeah, it depends on where it goes. You'll get some other mentions of other areas. But one of the things that really got me was years ago, I listened to this fascinating podcast. At first, there was some books on tape that I listened to, lectures on tape I listened to, and then some podcasts I listened to that all have historical stuff going on, and especially a lot of focus on Middle Eastern stuff, especially around Turkey and the things around the Red Sea, the Middle Eastern region. In prehistory and then into early history. And there is so much going on down there. Constantinople, the Eastern Roman Empire, so much happened there that is absolutely mind-blowing, fascinating stuff. And I never knew about any of it until I was out of college. I mean, I took all the required history courses in high school. I took more than enough history courses in college, and somehow I never knew any of this stuff. I never knew. I wish I could even listen to the Hardcore History podcast when he starts going on about the cons. That was the big one. Oh, my son came to me, and this is where the rage came from originally. Just before the summer when I told you I was going to do this history rage, and then I put it off. This is why I originally brought it up then. Is we got to talking about Genghis Khan, and all of my kids really like Genghis Khan, at least the history of Genghis Khan, and I have a lot to do with that, I hope. And my oldest son is talking about it because something he picked up at school, and he realized that he was missing a lot of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, Genghis Khan had the largest empire on earth in his lifetime. All right. Yeah, Alexander the Great, and we studied Alexander the Great. You get plenty of Alexander. All right, Alexander the Great had the largest empire on earth in his day, but then Genghis Khan comes much later, and Genghis Khan completely kicks Alexander's ass, all right? Genghis Khan dominated Asia. I mean, he owned China and the Russian steppes, Mongolia. All of this stuff belonged to him, into India and the Middle East. Starts taking parts of Africa, and not just Genghis Khan, but also his successors, because Genghis died early, probably because of alcohol. But his grandson Ogadai also takes over and expands his empire even further. They were touching Europe. They were brushing on Eastern Europe. They actually invaded Eastern European cities, towns, and started taking over some stuff. And it was only because Genghis died, and then later when Ogadai got there, it was only because Ogadai died that they didn't take over Europe, because they would have rolled over Europe. You know, I mean, it wouldn't have been a contest. because Europe had no unified central structure to hold it together. There was nothing to protect them from this wave of humanity that would have crushed down on them. This empire was massive and unreal, and it was unlike anything that had ever happened before because Genghis Khan and then later his grandson were brilliant organizers, brilliant at picking out the right leaders, taking leaders from the people you've defeated, taking people who are not like yourself and putting them in positions of power and ruling through fear, but also ruling through this massive bureaucracy. I mean, you think Genghis Khan, you picture this, you know, horse rider off the plains, and that's how he started. He was literally this dirt poor peasant horseman who rose up to become freaking Genghis Khan. And what he did was amazing. And if you have a chance, go listen to Hardcore History. Listen to Dan Carlin do his Wrath of the Khans, 5-part, probably 15 to 20 hours worth of material. You will thank me for it later. It's great stuff. And I mean, this is huge. This is momentous. This is an important part of our history. The whole idea of the plains of Asia, the huge vast seas of grass out there that produce these horse tribes and these aggressors that churn out and eventually produce the Huns and the Mongolians and the, I mean, that's huge. And it should be taught in history to everybody in this country. And yet we barely know anything about it. Genghis Khan is a passing mention in world history. It's a footnote in history in American schools. That just boggles me. I'm blown away by that. That's the part that bothers me. And that's why all of my kids love Genghis Khan, because I love Genghis Khan. I don't specifically love Genghis Khan, the person, because he was really, a vile and cruel killer, and he destroyed millions of lives, killed millions of people. All right. He was a rolling Holocaust. All right. It was horrible, but I love that part of history. I'm fascinated by that part of history. And I share that with my kids. And, my brother Kyle has, a Genghis Khan, concert tour t-shirt. And now my third son, Eli, has the exact same shirt. And he wears it. He loves his Genghis Khan tour shirt. He just thinks it's the coolest thing in the world. So anyway, that's my rage on history. There, you guys finally get it. Is that, and I know it's an old complaint, but really, are we that egocentric? Are we that Eurocentric? Are we that we can't give a comprehensive look at the really momentous things that have shaped the world through history? I mean, it's really, I mean, did the world start at Plato? Is that what it comes down to? All right. Enough of my rant. I guess I did get a little bit worked up. That was kind of cool. But you know what? Oh, that's everything I've got planned for you. So it's time for the Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums, and I'll add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And I told you last week that I had lost a bunch of stuff. Fortunately for me, I actually checked the list. I have nothing from Ronster. Everything that Ronster had ever sent me was completely wiped off the list. Fortunately, he still had the original copies of the original private messages or emails or whatever it was. He forwarded all that stuff to me. And so now Ronster's 100-and-something entries are all back on the list. And I'm sure we're going to hear from him, because it's him and Zim really are tied for the lead here. I'm just so excited. I cannot wait to get back to a little Pod-O-Matic. So, first one, number 32. And I look down my list, and I see that Zimny, see what I tell you. Zimny says, How does Mario shoot fireballs underwater? All right. Because you're very limited in your thinking, obviously, Zim. You're clearly... I get that it's hard to think outside the box. All right. But just because you can't burn wood underwater or paper or traditional fire doesn't mean that there aren't intensive heat and light producing chemical reactions that can work perfectly well underwater. And that's what he's doing. It's the exact same thing. It's the exact same thing that let SpongeBob start a campfire. I mean, I'm sure they were even working on it together. So really, it's not that unusual, is it? I mean, honestly, I would think the growth mushrooms are a bigger problem for me, really. But yeah, no, it's still what you would consider fire. It is an intense chemical reaction that releases lots of light and heat. I mean, you've seen videos of arc welding underwater, right? You've seen welders, the underwater welders. What was that Cuba Gooding Jr. movie? It's him and Robert De Niro, and he was the underwater welder, and he was for the Navy. Yeah, you've seen that, and all that fire and light, and that just, it can happen. It can happen. I'm sure it can. Number 30. That is Ronster. Hey, all right, Ronster. If you had your own periodical, what would you name it? Excluding Nerd Pride Anything. What do you mean I can't name it Nerd Pride Anything? Are you serious? I am Nerd Pride Radio. How do you not? Oh, man. All right, now you've taken away all my best answers, man. Then in that case, I would come up with something. Oh, this is one of those things that you can't. I don't know that I can sit down and just create inspiration, because a good magazine name would be like a good band name. You really gotta, it's one of those things that you know it when you hear it, and then you save it for later, and you go, yeah, that's what I need. All right. I like Cobalt Quarterly. See, that's a great name for a gaming magazine. And it would be something like that. Polyhedral? Nope, that's already been a gaming magazine. I can't do that. Dungeon and Dragon are both taken. It's got to be something Pathfinder related, and something that doesn't necessarily. Taking a cue from the last podcast, since I just finished listening to it yet again earlier today, I might do something like, I don't want to do Critical Hit, but Grievous Wounds. Yeah, but you know, Grievous Wounds. Wounds is kind of. Oh, man. Oh. How about Mike's Favorite Things Quarterly? I got nothing. Is that all you got? Okay. Number 8. Again from Zimny. Zimny says, hey, which... He doesn't say hey. I'm just imagining that he says hey. Which Disney princess would you most like to court? Ooh. All right. If I were a courting man, you know what? I want to say Mulan, because Mulan is a really strong character and I really like her. But, ultimately I think Mulan and I may not have a whole lot in common. I think she's great and I respect her and all, but I just don't think we'd share a lot of interests. I love, Rapunzel from Tangled. I thought she was spectacular. But again, Rapunzel is played off, I mean, in that movie, God, what is she, 15 in that? It's really, while I thought she was a great character and an interesting character, and I could see if I were, you know, a young man that she would certainly be my type, but that just feels kind of wrong and icky, you know what I mean? Same thing with Anna from Frozen. She seems like a child. I really have a tough time with that. And yet, who are my other princesses? Not Pocahontas. Does she even count as a princess, really? Merida from Brave, really like her. She might kick my ass. She's pretty tough, and she's made it very clear in that movie that she doesn't need a man to make herself complete, so I might not even have a shot at all. Yeah, you know what? At this point, let's just assume that I'm a courting man, so I'm a much younger man. Let's assume that I'm, you know, appropriately aged for this, and I'll just go with Rapunzel on that one. I think she's my favorite, but that's just me. Oh my God! I can't believe I forgot this in the Guardians of the Galaxy review. I'm sorry, we're gonna have to take a podomatic break here. In Guardians of the Galaxy, again, the CGI was awesome. The effects were awesome. But one of my favorite pieces of this whole movie, and I have no idea why it struck me the way it did, but Nebula, the blue-skinned villain, daughter of Thanos, I'm not spoiling anything here, played by Karen Gillan, who is Amelia Pond from Doctor Who, Karen Gillan as Nebula in the full outfit and makeup and the whole business, shaved bald head, oh my God, I am so in love with her. There was every moment she was on screen, I was riveted. There was something about her that I went, oh my God, that's my type. Holy, I mean, blue, cyborg looking, everything, it doesn't matter. Didn't matter. There was something about her bearing, her mannerisms, the really tough, American accent she put on for the role, just everything about her. Whew. I loved Nebula. I love Karen Gillan. Holy cow. It's just amazing. All right. Anyway, I had to throw that in because I just, again, I'm in love. All right. I think that she may well be my new favorite. I can't. All right. Anyway, enough of that. Let's get back to where we were. Did I finish Disney Princesses? Did I roll again? I can't. All right. You know what? Let's just roll. All right. Thanks, R2. Number 88. This is also from Zimney. Again, Zimney. What weaknesses should werewolves have in games? Well, probably they should be really kind of insecure about themselves. They're vulnerable to criticism, I would think. Silver. Werewolves should be vulnerable to silver. That's their biggest weakness. I also think werewolves should... Well, again, it depends on the story. In games. All right, we're talking in games, not in stories. In games, werewolves should be vulnerable to weaponry in general. Like if you're playing a werewolf, if you're fighting a werewolf, if it's in a game, you should be able to hurt them. However, they're going to be resistant to lots of stuff. And so once you get that silver in there, silver is where they're going to be vulnerable. That's absolutely required. Other things, wolf's bane to drive them away or poison them or whatever. I don't care about the wolf's bane. I don't care about any of that. Silver is the big thing. That's what's important. I mean, in fact, I don't even know why you'd need anything else. So, and I suppose if you're playing Pathfinder, it's silver or magic. Apparently magic just is it overrides everything because it's the magic bullet, I guess. So there you go. I got nothing else on that one. Thank you. Number 81, that is... Oh, it's Stan. All right, someone who's not Zimney or Ronster. No offense, guys. Stan, do you have any body parts of unusual shape or size? Yes, I do. And no, it's nothing dirty. My head is misshapen. I was born with a cleft lip, cleft palate. And so therefore... as a result of that, I was born with a hole in my face, which has been repaired since. I got pretty good repair work. I've talked about it before. But as a result of that, I have a huge dent on the top right side of my skull. I mean, just a dent. They took a big old chunk of bone out there to help fix up my face. And so if I ever have a need to freak out little kids, I always make mention of something about surgery and all this. And then I get to go, well, no, I have a huge dent in my head. You can almost feel my brain. You want to touch it? And then I'll get their hand and I'll put it right up there. And you can't see it because, you know, I still have all my hair. But put their hand up there and then they can feel the dent. And the reaction usually is either, oh, wow, cool. Or they jerk their hand away suddenly and go, oh, is it, does it hurt? Is it? Okay. Either way. That's my misshapen skull, and it's why I can never go bald, and I hope I don't ever lose enough of my hair to show that off, because it is a big-ass dent in my skull with a giant scar running down the center of it. I'm imagining that if I didn't have hair, it would be kind of ugly. So there you go. Number three. Ooh, top of the list. Dire Cat. Hey, Dire Cat. If you were Aquaman, what would you do? What do you mean, what would I do? I would swim, and I'd talk to fish, and I would have a really cool harpoon hand, because I would be the coolest version of Aquaman with the big ol' Poseidon-type beard and the hook hand, and that's what I would do. I don't know. What do you do when you're Aquaman? I've always had a fondness for Aquaman. I have an Aquaman t-shirt nowadays that I got as pajamas for our superhero-themed Christmas pajamas a few years ago. And when I was a kid, my underoos were Aquaman, and they were awesome. I was killer in my Aquaman underoos. You know, I've never seen a version of Aquaman in comics or TV or any other media that I actually liked. I've never found Aquaman to be really all that cool. But if I had to be Aquaman, I would make sure I was the coolest Nordic Viking-looking version of him. And then I would go off and I would swim around and breathe underwater and talk to fish. I don't know. Whatever Aquaman does. Number 62. Hey, number 62 is from Kyle. Kyle says, do you worry that you're going to miss the singularity? The capitalized singularity. And then in parentheses he says, and the ability to be immortal by uploading your mind to the cloud? End parentheses. By just one generation. So am I worried I'm going to miss the singularity by one generation? This seems really likely, doesn't it? Is what he asks. You know what? I don't know that the singularity is going to come around that fast. I think the singularity is our modern version of space travel. Do you remember in the 50s and 60s? Well, you don't remember, but do you remember hearing about the 50s and 60s? When we finally got a man on the moon in 69, and then going into the 70s, and we were sending out probes and rockets and all sorts of amazing stuff, and we were positive. We were absolutely positive. We would have colonies on the moon by 1990. By the year 2000, we were going to be leaving the solar system. I mean, it was an absolute exponential progression of explosive space travel. That's clearly what was going to happen. And instead, what has happened is almost nothing. Almost nothing. Oh, we know a lot more about space. And we send out our probes, and we've sent out lots of really cool instruments and tools, and we're getting tons of great information, and we've explored further than we've ever explored before, but we're not going anywhere. We're not getting off this planet, all right? And I think that's what the singularity is going to be. I think right now we see this progression of advancing computers and electronics, and our computers are getting smarter and smarter, and they're starting to get to where they can pass the Turing test, and they can fool us into believing that they're real people. And I think we're getting to the point where we're convinced that getting that direct mind-to-electronics interface is just around the corner, that it's clearly the next logical step, and that you know, 50 years from now, 80 years from now, clearly we'll all be downloading information directly into our brains and uploading our own thoughts and memories straight into the computers, and thus comes the singularity, as we can all live forever because we can all put our brains, consciousnesses, thoughts, emotions, everything can all be backed up and saved and put into robots or biological constructs or other people or whatever we're going to do for the rest of our lives, the rest of eternity at that point, because our lives would be forever. And I just don't think it's going to happen that soon, if at all. I mean, I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying the mistake that everyone makes is everyone assumes that the mind, the human brain, works like a computer, and it doesn't. The human mind works, you know, thinking of it like a computer is a useful way of imagining certain functions of how the brain works, but the human brain, this organic construct, is absolutely nothing like a computer in its actual function. in its actual mechanics. And so therefore, that next step that we need to take to create an artificial construct that can think the way humans can and thus can store ourselves in them, I think is a further step down the line than we think it is. We have not yet seen that revolutionary change in how we handle information and how we think about artificial intelligence. We haven't seen that huge paradigm shift that will mark the, this is where our real artificial intelligence is going to come from. I mean, right now we can get thinking machines that are pretty damn smart and can answer all of our questions and can beat you on Jeopardy. Specifically you, because you're not very good at Jeopardy to start with. And we can do all that, but it's not until we get computers that can store emotions and store perceptions. And anyway, it's a bigger task than that. So I think we're not going to miss it by one generation. I think we're going to miss it by a couple hundred years. If it comes around at all. Like I say, I'm not convinced that it's happening. So we'll see. And you know what? 15 years from now, I could be wrong. That happens. I just don't think that that's where it's going to be yet. Number 73. Zimnipot. All right. Zimnipot says, name five uses of a stapler without staples. Okay. One, it's a paperweight. That's obvious. Two, a club. Because that's also obvious. If I've got zombies coming into my office, my stapler may not be the first thing I grab, but it would certainly work. And if you've got the thing all the way opened out, it's almost, you know, with that lever action, I don't know, it just feels like you're going to get some good solid shots out of it, although you're really not. That hinge is going to snap after the first couple of whacks. But that's okay. So paperweight, club, it is useful for doing your impression of that guy from Office Space. I specifically have a red Swingline 747, exactly like the movie, sitting on my desk at work. Got that from my dad. Thank you, Dad. Let's see, what other uses do I have for a stapler without staples? Let's see. It's kind of really too thick and awkward to use it to prop up a corner of your desk or anything like that. Boy, man, I am really not very creative here, am I? I could use it as a placeholder to mark your cue on the floor, so you'll know that when you enter, the stapler is where you're going to be when the cameras start rolling again. And what else can I do with it? I could also use it for juggling. I don't think I could juggle three staplers, but I could certainly juggle two balls and a stapler. Because if I have just one stapler to think about as you kind of flip it like a club, it's not really balanced like a club. If you've only got one of them to concentrate on, I could do that. Yeah, I think that last one's kind of pushing it, but it works. Number 81 is from, no, that's Stans. All right, we've done 81 before. Hold on. Number 60. All right, we haven't done this one. 60 is from Ronster. Ronster says, what do you think is the best way to kill fire ants? Oh, man, I want to make a joke and say little tiny samurai swords. But no, poison. Just straight up poison them. Oh, my God. You got fire ants where you live? I hate fire ants. I hate them with a cold passion. They frighten me. Because when I was 2 years old, maybe, two or three, we lived in a trailer park in Alabama while my dad was down there for training for the Air Force. And I went out to the playground that was part of the little trailer park area and put my foot smack in the center of a fire ant hill. And so here I am, 3 years old, with fire ant bites all the way up my leg. And I remember sitting on the sink as they're putting baking soda plasters all over my leg and trying to take the sting out, or when, maybe it was meat tenderizer. I can't remember. I just remember I cried a lot because it hurt. It was horrifying. It was one of the most traumatic experiences of my life. The only reason I remember what that trailer looks like on the inside is because I remember that moment. I remember it so clearly and seeing everything around me in that stark, horrible, horrible moment. So I hate fire ants. And I've been bitten by them a few times since then. My parents and my brother and his family all live down south in Texas, and they get fire ants, plenty of them. And I'm sorry, just dump poison on them. Just the big old granulated poison. Cover that mound with it and wait for them to die, because that's what they deserve. Number 23. 23 is Ronster again. Sweet. Hey, Ron. Ron says, are you a good driver? Are you better at it than your wife? No, I suck. I'm a horrible driver. I've always been a horrible driver. My wife is a way better driver than I am, and yet I'm always the one driving. I really need to fix that because she's a better driver than I am. I'm just not good. I don't pay attention. I pay attention for a while, and then I get overconfident. I'm like, hey, I haven't had a ticket in 2-3 years. Things are going great. And then all of a sudden I screw it all up, and it's – no, I'm a terrible driver. My only consolation is my oldest son is a far worse driver than I am. But I think that's only a function of his age because, you know, he's my son. So he has less experience than I do to temper out his really, really horrible driving that he inherited from me. But yeah, I'm a bad driver. I should not get behind the wheel. It's not good. All right. You know what? We're over an hour. I'm going to call time. GLaDOS?
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2014 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Weezer's In the Garage, and Science Fiction Double Feature by Me First and the Gimme Gimmies. These songs are available on iTunes. You check them out. You buy them. You enjoy them. I wouldn't include them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes and write me a nice review. Or check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Just stop at the Facebook page. Click like. It's just 9 seconds out of your busy, busy day. You can do that for a chum, right? Oh, I don't have my Twitter account on here yet. I got to add that to my credits. You can check me out at Twitter, at Nerd Pride Radio. I really love my Twitter. I'm still enjoying it. Check it every day, many times a day, getting a little obsessive. Anyway, don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page, Instant Game, Animal Ball Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others, all free, all the time. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio, and I promise I will respond to you. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up, you send me a message, we'll hang out together, we'll be best buds, we'll have fun. Oh, all the way at the bottom of the list. This one's from Billy Bob, I haven't heard you. You probably don't even listen anymore, do you? I haven't gotten an email from Billy Bob in over a year. But if you are listening, this is for you. This goes out to all the... No. Billy Bob asks, what would you use to make your horcruxes? That is an awesome question, sir. My horcruxes, if I... Let's see. Okay, first off, my ring. All right, my new... I don't even know if I told you guys about this. I got a spinner ring for Father's Day, and it's awesome. It's blue and silver, and literally it's a spinner ring that has the numbers 1 to 20 on it. So I can spin my ring. Here. Oh, darn it. All I did was hit the microphone. That was stupid. But you can't see it. But my spinner ring spins and gives me a die 20 roll. I love my spinner ring. So that would be my first horcrux. How many do I need? I guess there's no real limit on it. In fact, Voldemort kind of went to the extreme when he created 7 horcruxes. They even said that, you know, a soul can't be divided that much without a lot of damage. But clearly, clearly my ring would be one. R2 would be one. That's awesome. Sorry for the interruption. So my ring and then R2, my fully pimped out pod-o-matic bubble would be one of my horcruxes. Absolutely for sure, Lucky, my 12-inch tall Tanuki statue that I keep in my office. The Tanuki, the Lucky raccoon dog statue from Japan. Those three for sure would be my horcruxes. Ring, Potomatic Bubble, Tanuki, Lucky. Do I need more? I think three would be probably even too much for my fragile little soul. But if I come up with any more, after I put out this episode, I'll also start a thread on the forums for it because I actually think this would be kind of interesting. So anyway, those would be my three horcruxes. Although, now that I think about it, do I need to do something that would keep them separated? I mean, Voldemort used a snake, for goodness sake, and he had them separated and well hidden and guarded by, a million magical safeguards, but then of course he was also ultimate evil and people were out to kill him, so you would need a little extra protection in that case, I suppose. Well, anyway, those are my three. I think that's actually a good answer. I'm going to quit while I'm ahead, otherwise I'm just going to ruin this with talk. So, next week.